They say you can't confess to a murder and still walk free. But Duane Keefe D. Davis did. For nearly two decades, he openly boasted of orchestrating Tupac Shakur's shooting, claiming Diddy offered $1 million for the hit. His nephew pulled the trigger, and the drive-by was planned in cold blood. Then, nearly 27 years later, he was arrested in Las Vegas and indicted. From jailhouse interviews where he claimed he lied for fame, to shocking statements from Suge Knight that Tupac begged to die, the twists keep coming. No gun, no car, no eyewitness placing Davis at the scene. Even prosecutors admit evidence is inconclusive. And Suge Knight now points fingers at Diddy. This isn't just a true crime deep dive, it's a spotlight on how memory, celebrity, and narrative collide in the quest for justice. And with Davis's trial set for February 2026, the final chapter remains unwritten. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. Setup. The spark that lit the flame. September 7th, 1996. Las Vegas Strip. The air was electric. Tyson had just won his fight in under two rounds, and the MGM Grand was buzzing with the kind of energy that only Vegas could conjure. Glitz, aggression, and danger simmering beneath the surface. Among the crowd was a man whose name was already legend, Tupac Amaru Shakur. Flanked by Death Row Records CEO Marion Suge Knight, Tupac was riding high. At just 25 years old, he was the voice of rebellion, rage, and poetic fire. But that night, he was more than a rapper. He was a marked man. After the fight, something happened in the MGM Grand's hotel lobby that would ignite a chain reaction. Tupac spotted a young man named Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, a known Southside Crips affiliate. Anderson had allegedly snatched a Death Row medallion from one of Tupac's associates weeks earlier. What followed was caught on security cameras, a brutal group assault led by Tupac himself. He threw the first punch. Suge followed. Then the rest piled on. The beating lasted less than a minute, but it was enough. Enough to seal a death warrant. The web of power, pride, and gang ties. Tupac wasn't. PM, the jury returned. The courtroom went silent. The verdict. We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Gasps. Some cried. Others applauded. Keefe D. sat stone-faced. No reaction. He would later be sentenced to 25 years to life in prison, with the possibility of parole after 20 years due to his age and health. It wasn't just a conviction. It was the final chapter in a 30-year saga that blurred fact and legend, music and murder, fame and death. The fallout. The hip-hop community exploded. Some saw the verdict as redemption, a long-overdue win for Tupac's family and fans. Others saw it as selective justice, a desperate attempt to close a case that had gone cold long ago. Tupac's stepbrother, Moprem Shakur, released a public statement. It's not about punishment. It's about accountability. And finally, someone stood up and said, "You don't get to kill our people," and walk away. Diddy's legal team issued a sharp response to Suga's claims. These rumors are baseless, defamatory, and clearly designed to deflect attention from those truly responsible. Suge Knight, ever the disruptor, promised to reveal more in a rumored documentary project set to drop in 2027. And Keefe D, in his final statement before sentencing, he simply said, "I never thought words could get you life, but I guess they do." Tupac's legacy rewritten. In the aftermath of the trial, something strange happened. Tupac's music began climbing charts again. Documentaries surged in views. His interviews were remixed into TikToks, spoken over by Gen Z activists calling for truth, justice, and transparency in the system. He had once said, "I'm not saying I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world." For some, that spark reignited in 2026, when his murder finally saw a courtroom, a verdict, and a face behind the trigger. But did we get the whole truth? That's the haunting question that lingers. Was Keefe D truly the mastermind? Or the last man standing in a web of gang politics and industry betrayal? Did Diddy place a hit? Or was it street retaliation, pure and simple? Was Suge Knight a victim? or something far more sinister? And what about Biggie? For all the closure this trial offered, it also reopened wounds, rekindled conspiracies, and revived questions that may never be answered. Epilogue. The final shot. Tupac Shakur's death changed music. It changed the way artists viewed their own safety, their contracts, their power. It was the moment the game stopped being a metaphor and became real. Now, decades later, the man who claimed to have set the night in motion is behind bars. But somewhere in the shadows, the real motives, the real money, and the real silence still linger. And Tupac's ghost still speaks. Just beefing with rappers. He was entangled in a world of deep gang politics, music industry blood feuds, and street-level vengeance. Death Row Records had ties to the Mob Piru Bloods, while Anderson and his uncle, Dwayne, Keith D. Davis, were embedded in the Southside Crips. The brawl in the MGM lobby wasn't just a fight, it was a public humiliation. And in street code, that meant retaliation. Keith D. wasn't some random figure. In the late 80s and early 90s, he was a shot caller, a top dog in Compton's Crip hierarchy. Connected, feared, strategic. While Orlando Anderson was younger, Keith was the one people called when things needed fixing or erasing. Within hours of the hotel incident, Keith D. would make a call. His nephew had just been jumped by one of the most famous men in America. Someone had to answer. A Cadillac, a Glock, and a drive-by decision. According to later confessions by Keith D., four men got into a white Cadillac that night. Dwayne, Keith D. Davis, front passenger. Terrence T. Brown Brown, driver. DeAndre Big Dre Smith. Orlando Anderson, Keith's nephew. All were Southside Crips. All were armed. Keith D. would later say he passed the Glock to the back seat. He claimed Orlando and Dre were arguing over who would shoot. Then the white Cadillac pulled up beside Tupac's black BMW at a red light on East Flamingo Road. In the BMW, Tupac and Suge Knight. The shooter opened fire. Tupac was hit four times. Suge, grazed in the head, managed to drive away. They raced toward University Medical Center as the city's chaos swallowed the crime scene whole. No arrests were made. No murder weapon recovered. No real leads that held water, at least not then. The silence of the streets and the industry. What happened next was stunning. Despite the public nature of the crime, the gang affiliations, and the camera footage of the hotel fight, the Las Vegas Police Department fumbled the case. Witnesses were uncooperative. Suge Knight, despite sitting inches from Tupac, told police he heard nothing and refused to name suspects. The hip-hop world was silent too. Whether out of fear, loyalty, or distrust of law enforcement, no one talked. Even the surveillance tape of the MGM beatdown, which would later become key evidence, was shelved. It wasn't until nearly a year later that its significance returned, after the streets had spoken in blood. Two deaths, one story. Just 6 months after Tupac's murder, Christopher Biggie Smalls Wallace, aka the Notorious B.I.G., was gunned down in Los Angeles. The murders became linked in the public consciousness. East Coast versus West Coast. Death Row versus Bad Boy. Tupac versus Biggie. But behind the music rivalry was something far more tangled, a war between gangs that had spilled into the billion-dollar rap industry. While conspiracy theories swirled around Biggie's murder, law enforcement quietly returned to the Tupac case. They weren't just looking at Suge Knight. They were listening for a man named Keith D. 2008. The deal that changed everything. Over a decade later, Keith D. was facing a serious federal drug case. He was looking at life behind bars. That's when Detective Greg Kading and the LAPD-FBI Joint Task Force offered him a deal. Tell us what happened the night Tupac died, and we'll consider it. Keith D. took the offer. Sitting in a room full of federal agents, he laid it out. I was in the front seat. We rode in the Cadillac. We passed the gun to the back seat. Orlando was sitting behind me. He claimed the shots came from the back. He didn't say who pulled the trigger, but heavily implied it was Orlando. In exchange for his testimony, Keith received immunity from prosecution, but only for statements made during that one 2008 interview. 2018, 2019, From Secret Confession to Public Spectacle. A decade after that protected interview, Keith D went public. He appeared in BET's Death Row Chronicles. He published a tell-all memoir called Compton Street Legend. He gave interviews, talked on YouTube, sat with Vlad TV. He even claimed that Diddy, yes, Sean Diddy Combs, had offered $1 million to kill both Tupac and Suge Knight. Suddenly, this was no longer a cold case. It was a media firestorm. But the more Keith D spoke, the more dangerous his freedom became. He was no longer protected by that 2008 immunity. He was now volunteering confessions. In 2023, after 27 years of speculation, the Las Vegas Police Department executed a search warrant on Keith D's home. They seized computers, documents, and drafts of his memoir. Months later, they had what they needed. 2023, the arrest on. September 29, 2023, Dwayne Keith D. Davis was arrested and charged with murder with a deadly weapon in the killing of Tupac Shakur. The world exploded. He was 60 years old. His health was failing, but the justice system had finally moved. In court, prosecutors pointed to his years of public confession, his memoir, his interviews, his direct statements of involvement, but Davis's attorneys hit back. They claimed it was entertainment, not evidence, that he had exaggerated to sell books, generate clicks, and preserve street cred. There was no physical evidence, no recovered weapon, no direct eyewitness confirming he pulled the trigger, or even handed over the gun, the return of Suge Knight. Then came the twist. In a bombshell interview in 2025, Suge Knight broke his long silence. From prison, he told reporters that Tupac begged doctors not to bring him back if he flatlined. Suge also doubled down on the Diddy bounty rumor, claiming that the hit was coordinated at the highest levels. Even more shocking, Suge suggested that Tupac's own mother, Afeni Shakur, had agreed to let her son die peacefully rather than be kept on life support. And as for Keith D, Suge said the man was a pawn, used, discarded, and now held up as the fall guy for a much bigger game. The spark that won't go out. This isn't just about who fired the gun. It's about a culture of violence, a justice system that failed for nearly three decades, and a story so tangled in ego, money, and loyalty that even now, almost 30 years later, we're still trying to separate fact from fiction. But one thing is clear. The night Tupac died, something shifted in America. It wasn't just the death of a rapper. It was the birth of a legend, one that would haunt us all. Chapter 2. Escalation. Confessions, lies, and the court of public opinion. If Chapter 1 was the spark, Chapter 2 is the explosion. After 27 years of silence, rumors, and self-promotion, Dwayne Keith D. Davis was no longer a background character in the murder of Tupac Shakur. He was now center stage, shackled, indicted, and facing a courtroom that didn't care about rap beefs or street codes. Only justice, or the closest thing to it. But what happens when your star witness is your own defendant? I did it, or maybe I didn't. Keith D's confession. Spiral. Let's rewind to why we're even here. Between 2008 and 2019, Keith D confessed to being directly involved in Tupac's murder multiple times, in multiple formats, to multiple audiences. A confidential 2008 proffer session with the LAPD and FBI made under threat of a federal drug charge, a 2017 BET interview in Death Row Chronicles. His 2019 memoir, Compton Street Legend, Vlad TV, YouTube, and several hip-hop podcasts. A 2022 Streetside interview where he casually stated, "We was all strapped. I handed the burner to the back seat. That's where the shots came from." The prosecution said, "That's our guy." The defense said, "He's just talking." But this wasn't just talk anymore. In 2023, after his arrest, Keith D did something unexpected. He walked it all back. The jailhouse flip-flop. I lied to sell books. In jail interviews and statements made in court, Keith D recanted. He claimed everything he said in those videos, interviews, and memoirs was entertainment. "I was just telling stories, you know, trying to make a few dollars, sell some books. I wasn't there." The defense leaned hard into this. They argued that Keith D had embellished, fabricated, and fictionalized his involvement in the murder to build a public persona, a street legend, a myth. but prosecutors had receipts. They pointed out that Keefe's statements were consistent across time. Same car, same people, same gun. They had no immunity for anything said after the 2008 proffer. And most damning of all, he had described details never publicly released, specifics only someone in the car that night could have known. Still, the defense wasn't done. They brought up the fact that no physical evidence tied Keith D to the scene. No murder weapon was recovered. No DNA or fingerprints. No surveillance footage of the actual shooting. No credible eyewitness testimony placing him at the intersection. So how do you convict someone of murder based entirely on his own words? The trial looms, February 2026. As of July 2025, Keith D's trial is scheduled to begin in February 2026. He remains in custody without bail, and prosecutors have assembled a list of nearly three dozen witnesses, including former law enforcement officers, Tupac's associates, street insiders, forensic analysts, and, possibly, Tsu-Jae Knight himself. Why is that last one so explosive? Because Tsu-Jae Knight is now talking, and what he's saying could upend everything. Tsu-Jae Knight, the wild card. In early 2025, from inside a California state prison, Tsu-Jae Knight gave a series of bombshell interviews. For decades, he stayed silent about what really happened the night Tupac was shot. But now, he claims, Tupac knew he wasn't coming back. He told the doctors to let him go. His mama Afeni said the same. They honored his wish. But it didn't stop there. Tsu-Jae also claimed that Sean Diddy Combs had offered $1 million for a hit on him and Tupac, confirming what Keith D had been saying all along. And then came the most bizarre moment. In an interview with the San Francisco Chronicle, Tsu-Jae said that after Tupac was cremated, his ashes were mixed with marijuana and smoked by his closest friends, as part of a tribute ritual, a rumor that had swirled in hip-hop circles for years. Tsu-Jae's new wave of truth-telling was either a desperate attempt at redemption, a power move against Diddy, or another self-serving narrative from a man who built his empire on intimidation and chaos. Either way, prosecutors were listening. If Tsu-Jae testifies in 2026 and corroborates Keith D's original story, that could tip the scales dramatically. The Diddy factor. Smoke or fire. In both Keith D's and Tsu-Jae Knight's versions of events, Diddy is the man behind the curtain. They claim he placed the bounty, that he funded the retaliation, that he played both sides of the East Coast-West Coast feud while pretending to stay above it. But here's the catch. No direct evidence links Diddy to the murder of Tupac. No money trail. No witnesses. Just accusations. That hasn't stopped people from asking why, even decades later, no charges have been brought against him. In an unrelated 2023 lawsuit, Diddy faced allegations of abuse and corruption. Public perception has shifted. He's no longer the untouchable mogul. But legally, he's still clear of the Tupac case. For now. What about the gunman? Keith D has repeatedly suggested that his nephew, Orlando Anderson, was the one who pulled the trigger. But Anderson was killed in a gang shootout in 1998, just 2 years after Tupac's death. With him dead, there's no way to confirm or deny his role. Prosecutors seem to accept that Anderson was the shooter, but because Keith D supplied the gun, participated in the plan, and directed the hit, they've charged him with first-degree murder under a theory of conspiracy and aiding and abetting. It's not about who pulled the trigger anymore. It's about who set the wheels in motion. The immunity dilemma. The biggest legal wildcard in Keith D's case is the 2008 immunity agreement. During his federal drug case, Keith D was offered protection for statements made during his proffer session, but not for public statements made afterward. His defense claims the immunity should extend further, that his initial confession opened the floodgates and created a legal shield. The prosecution argues otherwise. In fact, they're betting the entire case on it. If a judge rules that his post-2008 statements are inadmissible or protected, the case could collapse. If not, he could spend the rest of his life in prison based on his own voice. The public spectacle and the legacy of Tupac. What makes this case unlike any other murder trial is the cultural weight behind it. Tupac wasn't just a victim. He was a martyr, a symbol, a movement. From murals in Haiti to protests in South Central LA, his name is sacred in black communities around the world. His lyrics are still quoted by revolutionaries. His interviews circulate on TikTok as prophecy, and now the man who said he was there when it all ended is on trial. But this isn't a clean story of justice. It's murky, painful, and complicated. Some say Keef Dee is a liar. Some say he's a scapegoat. Others say he's finally facing consequences. In the court of public opinion, no one agrees. A case that could change everything. If Keef Dee is convicted, it will mark the first time anyone has been held accountable for the murder of Tupac Shakur. It would send shockwaves through hip-hop and reopen questions about Biggie's death, Diddy's role, and the music industry's ties to gang culture. If he's acquitted, it could reinforce the belief that justice will never come for Tupac, that the systems meant to protect truth are broken, or worse, manipulated. Either way, the trial is already historic. Chapter 3. Climax. The trial, the ghost, and the verdict. No one saw coming. February 9, 2026, Las Vegas. The courtroom was quiet, heavy with anticipation. Dwayne Keef Dee Davis entered in a navy blue suit. No shackles, no chains. But his past trailed behind him like a shadow. He wasn't just facing a murder charge. He was facing the legacy of Tupac Shakur and a system that had taken 30 years to arrive at this moment. This wasn't just a trial. It was history on trial. Opening salvos. The prosecution wasted no time. They played a reel of Keef Dee's own words, taken from interviews, podcasts, and his memoir. We was in the white Cadillac. I handed the gun to the back seat. Boom, boom, boom. That was it. Jurors listened to the voice of the man they were here to judge. Calm. Matter of fact. No remorse. No hesitation. Prosecutors painted him as a cold, calculating gang shot caller who authorized the hit and handed over the murder weapon. They outlined the case in brutal detail. A clear motive. Revenge for the MGM Grand beatdown. A clear opportunity, knowledge of Tupac's location and route. And above all, multiple confessions made without coercion, money, or threats. This man, the prosecutor said, pointing at Davis, has told us, again and again, exactly how he helped kill Tupac Shakur. Then came the defense. Their argument was simple. Words are not proof. They said Keef Dee had exaggerated, lied, even joked about his involvement. That it was all part of a performance, built to sell books, get interviews, and secure fame in a culture that idolizes street credibility. He was trying to be a legend, said the defense attorney, not a killer. Enter the ghost of Suge Knight. On day 9 of the trial, the courtroom held its breath as Suge Knight appeared on a live video call from Mule Creek State Prison in California. His presence was surreal. The man who once ruled Death Row Records now sat in an orange jumpsuit, calm but lethal behind the eyes. And then he said something that stunned the court. Keef didn't do it. He wasn't even the one who pulled the trigger. But Suge didn't stop there. He doubled down on his own conspiracy, one that named Sean Diddy Combs as the real orchestrator behind Tupac's death. That money didn't come from nowhere. Diddy had it out for me and Pac, always did. The courtroom buzzed. The prosecution tried to strike the testimony from the record as speculative and unsubstantiated. But it was too late. The jury had heard it, and they had seen the face of the only surviving witness from that car. But even Suge, in his twist-filled testimony, never denied this. Tupac died in a targeted attack, and someone in that white Cadillac pulled the trigger. Whether Keef Dee handed over the gun or not, the prosecution argued, he was the architect of the entire plot. The immunity debate. Midway through the trial, a bombshell motion was filed by the defense. Exclude all post-2008 statements under expanded immunity. Their claim? The immunity deal Keef Dee signed in 2008 was misunderstood and should cover all derivative confessions, whether made in public or private. The judge denied the motion. That single ruling may have sealed Davis's fate. The court ruled that his public statements, given freely, long after any immunity expired, were voluntary confessions, and without the protection of immunity, they were now the prosecution's most lethal weapon. The witnesses who never came. Several names floated around the trial. former gang members, ex-death row employees, insiders from Compton, but many refused to testify. Some were dead. Others were unavailable in the legal sense. One potential witness, a retired LAPD detective who had worked on the 1990s gang unit, refused to appear in court, citing threats to personal safety. Another, a former associate of Diddy's alleged inner circle, declined to testify under subpoena, claiming the rumors were career suicide and unprovable mythology. The defense exploited the gaps. They argued the entire trial was built on old hearsay and hype. But the prosecution came back swinging. You don't get to talk on 10 interviews, publish a memoir, and then say, I was just kidding. Not when someone is dead. The jury deliberates. Closing arguments wrapped on March 1st. The jury of 7 women and 5 men was sent to deliberate. Day 1, no verdict. Day 2, no verdict. Day 3, still out. By day 4, reporters speculated a mistrial was possible. Tension mounted. Public protests began outside the courthouse. Some called for justice for Tupac. Others said Keef D was being used as a fall guy for an industry that had never protected its own. On day 5, just after 2:30,